Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Motivated by curiosity and currency. Powered by tenacity and tea. Silenced by no one. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Last hour of the program for this Tuesday, the 10th of January. Bob McCowan, Damian Cox, Murray Chast, a longtime MLB writer, will join us a little bit later on. David Branch, commissioner of the OHL, president of the CHL. OHL trade deadline earlier today. Damian and I were just having a conversation about the trade deadline and trades for junior hockey players. And I made the suggestion, maybe what they should do, I guess you can't really eliminate trading altogether, but what about an idea like no trades in season? Like, you can only trade junior hockey players during the off season.
I mean, the rationale is, like, for example, Anthony Cirelli went from Oshawa, who just finished playing on the world junior team, went from Oshawa to Erie. He's already an NHL draft pick. He played on a better team. I can see why that would be in his interest. Erie has a chance to go fairly far this year. But sometimes what people forget is, well, I don't know about that particular trade, but in some of these trades, what about the kids who go the other way? Yeah. If you get traded to Erie, you're changing countries. You're not just changing cities.
Yeah.
And you can be traded far away. You're probably in high school. You're supposed to be. And all of a sudden, I think it's a real challenge for the Ontario Hockey League. And David Branch, the commissioner, has made it a priority for education to be important. But how do you make that adjustment if you're 16 or 17 year old? You're already dealing with the burden of playing hockey at an elite level. So that's one thing we wanted to talk to him about.
We'll do that later on. Elliot Friedman joins us now, and this was not on our agenda.
I'm just finishing my count, by the way, because Elliot's 30 thoughts come out today, and every week I see how many are there really. And last week I was really giving it to him. Chopping them up into little tiny bits. How many are there this week, Friedge? How many are? Is it 30?
Do we have Elliot?
He's not there.
Oh. Hello. Hello. Testing 1, 2.
Are you there? You guys there?
Yeah. Well, we've always been here.
This one is pretty close to legit, I think. I look forward to the actual time. Count.
I can't remember what I gave you a hard time about yesterday, last week, but it was dicey, my friend.
It was Mason Raymond, and yes, it was dicey. Now, if I could explain the rationale behind this, there was a couple times where guys, and I remember Glenn Healy was one and PJ Stock was another. A few years ago, they came to me and said, that blog, it's like almost there's too much. Like, it's like they said it's like 30 huge paragraphs in a row. So why don't you break some of them up so that they're kind of easier to process? I actually thought that was a pretty legit complaint.
Preach, you know I love you. And you know what? I love your piece every week. But when you're listening to Glenn Healy and PJ Stock about writing, you are listening to the wrong people.
Look, don't make fun of PJ because he uses crayons, okay?
Give me your take. We were talking about junior hockey players being traded in the middle of the season and the wisdom of that. And a lot of these trades, the strong teams try and get stronger. The team that's hosting is going to the Memorial Cup. They always try and load up, sell the future for the present. We get that. We understand what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, is there an issue here? Should maybe we say no trades after October 1st or September 1st?
You know, the only thing is that, you know, the only probably issue I would have with that is, what if you're a team that suddenly has a good run? Like, shouldn't you have a chance to make a move?
Teenagers, Fried.
I know, but you know what? They want to compete too. I think the one thing that I've always felt is that I think if you're going to have a trade deadline, it should be during the Christmas break. Like, I know kids, well, a lot of kids went back to school yesterday, but I don't think you should be in a situation where if you are a player who is concerned about your academics, you could basically be starting your second semester of high school and, oh, wait a sec, all of a sudden, or your second semester of university, and all of a sudden you got traded. I think it might be too late.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny you mentioned the crossing of the border. I do know that in Mitchell Stevens' case, where Saginaw, he was a Tampa prospect who was traded from Saginaw. I do know that one of the reasons that there in his situation, there were players who did not want to waive their clauses to go back there because of that particular thing. They didn't want to have to go to another country in the middle of the year. It was an issue.
We've onto the NHL. We've seen a bunch of waiver moves lately, and some interesting guys. Alex Burmistrov moved, a couple of other guys, and then today Curtis McElhinney. Now it seems strange that a team, in a way, like Columbus, that has put together such a strong streak and may have a serious shot in the playoffs, are all of a sudden trading their backup goaltender. But not that big of a surprise. I guess they were thinking they had to make a move.
Yes, I think all, because they have two prospects, right?
Yeah.
Behind Bobrovsky, they have two young goalies who they're probably going to have to expose or lose in the expansion draft. So I think they're probably in a position where they're trying to decide if there's one they're going to trade or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus also, you know, when they lost on Saturday night, if you listen to John Tortorella after, he made a comment about one of those comments like, we really could have used a save from Curtis there.
Only Torts, eh?
He meant it meanly, but he said it. And then when he said it, you know, that starts the clock.
Only, you know, only Torts. They win a million games in a row. They lose one. He slags the backup goalie. I mean, come on. He's a beaut, Elliot.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have put him in.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I remember I was looking at that quote and I was like, uh-oh. And I was like, what does this mean?
Well, we found out. We
know exactly what it meant. And the other thing, the reason I think there's been so much action on the waiver wire demo is because it's impossible to make trades.
Yeah. So it's the only way. And so teams just don't want to just hang on. And I guess with Burmistrov and some of these other guys, they'd rather not carry the money.
Or they'd rather not give up a draft pick to get them. Say, right, we'll take them for free.
Right.
But we don't necessarily want to give you a draft pick for him.
Now, how does that – looks like Arizona and Colorado right now are the two teams that are pretty much out of it and might and have some things to offer up. But if, as you say, teams aren't willing to trade, maybe that's a timing thing. How much do the Coyotes and the Avalanche really have to offer, and how much can they hope to get back to rebuild their teams?
Well, this is one of the problems right now is that the other GMs are saying they're the only two teams right now that are willing to say we're out of it. So their prices are higher because they don't have a lot of competition. Now, Colorado, for their guys with term, like the Landeskogs and the Duchesnes, they're saying the prices are going to be very high. Now, Arizona, for guys who don't have term, guys like Martin Hanzel and the defenseman Michael Stone, other teams have said Arizona's prices have been high. I think what could change this is now Colorado starting to get calls on their free agents. That's John Mitchell, that's Jerome Iginla, that's Rene Bourque. And the sense that I'm getting is that Colorado isn't asking for as much for their rentals as Arizona is. So that might loosen up the market a little bit. But until, you know, I mean, until the Islanders decide, are we out of it? The Sabres, the Devils, I think it's going to be hard for teams to shake this loose.
Do you anticipate an active trade season? Because we are now officially in that trade season. Or because of the reasons you mentioned, it's less likely we'll see a lot happen.
The one wild card, Bob, is Vegas. You know, I had a chance.
Well, it influences teams, right?
It
influences teams.
Yes.
Understanding that their rosters are going to have to get exposed.
Yes, and I had a chance to speak to George McPhee yesterday because I was asking him for a couple comments about Ron Smith, his old coach who passed away last week. And I just checked with him and I said, "Do you guys still plan on being in business on March 1st, which is the day of the deadline?" He said, "Yes, we do. That is still our plan." So I do think that Teams are looking at guys who they don't want to lose for nothing, or they don't want to have to expose the expansion draft. Like, I'll tell you, like, Larry Brooks had a good call in the New York Post yesterday. You know, the New York Rangers are right now are probably going to have to expose Michael Grabner, who is tied with Austin Matthews for the NHL lead in even strength goals with 18. Mm. And, you know, that's something that I don't think the Rangers ever imagined they'd have to be worried about. But all of a sudden, you're looking at that situation, and you're saying, wait a sec, this is not something we want to do. Now, how are we going to get our way around it? And that is a variable I think a lot of these teams are looking at that they didn't have to look at or don't have to look at in most normal years.
Well, just back up a second. You said to George, are you going to be in business on March 1st? What do you mean?
Well, their initial plan was to pay their final installment of their expansion fee on April the 1st. But Bill Fuller, the owner, has said he wants to move that up. He wants to do it on March 1st. So that way that they're able to make transactions on that day.
Okay. So, yes. I mean, they can start doing deals. Like, they can start acquiring players?
Well, you can't acquire anybody who's on an NHL roster. But you can acquire prospects. You could make deals for draft picks. Mm-hmm. And the other thing they're going to be involved in, I think, is they're going to be involved in the search for any college or CHL free agents that are going to be available.
But that's a bit early for that.
Well, March is when teams start to get knocked out, right?
Yeah.
So you got to be involved.
Mm-hmm. We had Lou Lamoriello on earlier and talked about a variety of issues. Austin Matthews, obviously, at or near the top of the list. Mitch Marner, who he wanted to talk a little bit about, too. So that was all intriguing. But he was a little bit, I don't know about mysterious, but he was non-committal, I think,
as only Lou can be.
In terms of whether the success of this team may change the perspective as they get close to the trade deadline. In other words, are they less likely, more likely to be involved in trying to get into the playoffs through the only thing he said is it's a 5-year plan that changes every day.
Yes.
What do you think?
Which means he is not telling you.
Yeah, which means he's not telling us a damn thing.
I can't believe you're surprised that he wouldn't tell us anything.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm just commenting that this is what he said, and I'm wondering what you think about it.
I think it's all a long game, Bob. I really do. I don't think they're going to do anything that that reeks as a short-term move to them that costs them any kind of asset, whether it's a player, a prospect, a draft pick that they think is going to be important to building a long-term organization.
Yeah.
Now, if they can get someone on the short term in exchange for something they don't deem to be valuable, I could see that. But I don't think like a guy like James Van Riemsdyk is being traded anywhere right now unless they're getting a long-term defenseman back.
Well, I was going to say, I can't really think of anything other than a defenseman that would even motivate them to make a deal of any significance.
And the thing is I think more and more with JVR, Elliot, is so he's got this year and he's got next year.
Yep.
He's 27, I believe.
Yep.
Well, why are they necessarily moving him on? He's one of their best goal scorers.
I don't think they necessarily are. I think they're getting lots of calls about him.
Yeah, I mean,
other teams thinking maybe the Maple Leafs might want to move this guy.
I mean, I could see if he was 32, but unless they're convinced A, they don't want him, or B, he won't re-sign.
Well, I think B would be the issue, and not that he won't re-sign, but what's it going to cost?
What's the number? Yeah.
Like all of a sudden, you know, let's look like, and I've thought about this a lot since last summer. The Edmonton Oilers had a chance to trade for P.K. Subban. And one of the reasons they decided not to do it was his salary cap number is 9, and they knew, like, what's Connor McDavid's number going to be? And they're sitting there and they're saying, if you add 9 to what Connor McDavid's number is going to be, what kind of team are we going to have around them? So I'm looking at Austin Matthews right now, and I'm beginning to wonder, if he's going this way, what's his number going to be in 2 years? And every decision I think Lou Lamoriello and the Maple Leafs make has to be around that. Now, you've got Riley signed long-term to a great contract. You've got Kadri signed long-term to a great contract.
You got the goalie signed.
Yeah, if Anderson's going to be a top-10 goalie, as he's looking like he has a chance to be, you've got him signed to a great contract, then I think you can do a lot of things. But, you know, Van Riemsdyk, it all comes down to me to what he wants. Like, does he want to do what a lot of the other players have done, or does he want to hit a bigger number? And I think the Leafs know the answer to that question, and if the answer is they think that it's too rich for what they want to do, Damian, then if you really want to get the fair value for him, you have to do it by the summer.
I want to ask you two guys a question. I mean, the other night with Ovechkin scoring his 544th goal of his career, the irony, of course, is it ties Rocket Richard's career number, and it happened in Montreal. He also got his 999th point.
Yeah.
So, and it was not so many years ago. Maybe there are still some who debate this. Crosby, Ovechkin, who is the better player? I'm just wondering, as we focus now a little bit, or did last night, on Ovechkin achieving one milestone and being on the verge of another.
Yep.
Where is Ovechkin going to be when his career is said and done? How will we look at his career?
Well, I'll give you my take, and then I'll see what you think, Elliot. Yep. And clearly he'll be in the Hall of Fame, for starters.
Yep. Sure.
I think he will go down as the greatest offensive player, or one of the greatest offensive players of his era. But I think it's full stop there. And I don't think he'll ever be regarded as the complete player other players are, whether you're talking Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews. But he is a spectacular offensive hockey player. Elliot? Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. To me, if you look at the numbers adjusted for generation, and Damian, you're a guy who talks a lot about and about how scoring is down. Mm-hmm. If you look at Ovechkin's goals totals compared to his peers and the era he plays in, Bob, you can make an argument that he is the greatest goal scorer ever.
Mm. Yep.
Okay? However, we are in North America. What do we value most of all? We value championships. And he doesn't have one. And in hockey, that's not entirely his fault. I mean, it's a team game.
But
when you wear the C and you're the best player and you're the highest paid guy, the heat comes your way. I think he badly wants to win. I think he's changed a lot. But I still think that that's obviously the biggest hole in his resume.
Yeah.
I'm not on that list. I don't value championships at all. I don't think that that's part of an individual athlete's resume. I think it's an enhancement. It has some level of significance, but not importance. I don't think Dan Marino is not one of the five best quarterbacks of all time because he never won a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes a whole bunch of pieces, and one player, one athlete who has no control over who's around him can do nothing about that. So I dismiss that as a... I mean, just this is me.
Yeah.
I dismiss that as an argument.
And I don't think you're wrong. I mean, you could say that about Marcel Dion, but I think to me, the greater
Dion's
thing
another
is...
example.
I mean, Ovechkin as spectacular, and I think you might be right, Elliot, about being the greatest goal scorer ever. He is not anywhere close to a two-way hockey player.
Okay,
and for me, that doesn't work.
Let me ask you guys this, because we've talked about this. The holy quintet of hockey generally is some combination of Gretzky or Howe, Lemieux, and Richard. The way he's going, could Sidney Crosby break that list?
My problem is that I never saw Richard, so it's hard for me to have a feel on that one. But, boy, that's a hard group to break into, isn't it?
You know where he's going, though.
Yep.
I mean, he's got two Stanley Cups. He's got two gold medals. He's
yep.
got the World Cup championship.
It's Hart Trophy, scoring championship. Absolutely. No, I got you.
And he could win the Rocket Richard this year. And the thing that's amazed me about him is how much he's reinvented himself as a player. He's gone from the best playmaker in the league to the guy who could become the best scorer in the league.
And that's about Ovechkin, just to wrap that up. He's exactly the same player as he was when he first came in the league.
Yeah,
same guy.
Lots of goals and not much else. We got to go, Friedge. We're out of time. Always a pleasure. Thanks, pal.
All right. Take care, guys. Speak soon.
Elliot Friedman of the NHL on Sportsnet. We do spend some time on this program talking about Hall of Fame ballots for Major League Baseball is for several years we have had, Dave Perkins and a variety of others actually fill out their ballots live on the air on this program.
Yep.
And we get a lot of positive reaction to it. So when we hear something that is a little bit different, we are attracted to it, and we think our audience is as well. The longtime Major League Baseball writer Murray Chass made some waves when he sent in a blank ballot for this year's Hall of Fame. Last year, he voted for Ken Griffey Jr. and nobody else. You can vote for 10. He only voted for Griffey Jr. Murray Chass joins us now. Murray, good of you to take time for us tonight. We are intrigued by your choice, and the question is, why?
Well, it's simple. Unfortunately, people get so aroused over the Hall of Fame voting that they don't pay any attention to explanations. I have always, except for my first year of voting, I have always voted for very few people because I believe the Hall of Fame is for the elite of the elite. It wouldn't be a Hall of Fame if the players a lot of other voters think should be in it would be elected. I mean, there are a lot of voters who vote for 8 to 10 players. 10 is the maximum.
Right.
And they want the hall to allow them to vote for more. Well, I think there are a lot of very good players out there, but not great players. Last year, Ken Griffey, I thought, was a great player, so I voted for him. Mike Piazza was the other player who got in last year. I didn't vote for him because I don't vote for steroids cheats. Writers have a difficult decision to make about the whole steroids thing. Do we ignore the whole thing and just vote for players on what they accomplished on the field? Do we just single out guys who have been found to have used steroids? Or do we also include players who have avoided being caught, but it's fairly well known that they use steroids? To me, I don't vote for anybody who either is known to have used steroids or was strongly suspected to have used steroids.
Let me jump in and ask you a question. Since we've gone on this path, it's intriguing. Would you prefer that the hall itself established, I was going to say clarified, but to clarify, you'd have to established a position on the use of steroids and admission to the Hall of Fame, or are you more comfortable with allowing the 400-plus people who vote to make the determination on their own?
Well, it's an interesting question because the idea of asking the Hall or having the Hall establish a guideline on steroids has been proposed. And when I initially heard it a few years ago, I was opposed to it. I thought that the writers could decide for themselves. And I probably still feel that way, although I admit it's a very difficult thing to decide. The Hall doesn't want to do anything about it because they don't want to limit the players who can get into the Hall. I mean, let's face it, they are a commercial entity, and they're looking to make the Hall as popular as possible. The Hall of Fame without Clemens and Bonds would not be nearly the same as it would be if those two were in. So I think as difficult a decision as it is, I'm willing to put up with it. I've made my decision. Others have made the same decision, yet others have said, I'm not going to eliminate guys who use steroids. And everybody's entitled to do what they want. So this year, the players, as far as I'm concerned, fell into two categories, guys who were suspected of using steroids, and players who just weren't quite good enough. They were very good, but not good enough, in my opinion, to be elected to the Hall of Fame.
Do you think your position would change, though, Murray, if, in fact, over the last few years, since these alleged and proven steroid users have been rejected by the voters, if they had not, your compadres in the Baseball Writers Association of America, had chosen to allow Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, that group in, I mean, that would, they are essentially, your fellow voters are supporting your position on it. What if they'd taken the other side? Would you have felt differently?
No, because that's the way I feel. I spent a lot of time thinking about it, and that's the conclusion I came to, that it's not fair to other players to sanction steroids use by some players.
I happen to agree with you, and mm-hmm. I've taken that position since day one. The dilemma that I guess I have is the suspicious ones. You know, we live in a society, both in America and in Canada, where innocence is to be presumed until guilt is established. And for many of these guys, they are painted with the same brush as those that have been proven to have taken steroids.
Right.
And it's a real dilemma for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a dilemma, and that's why each person has to decide for himself. And I'll use Mike Piazza as an example.
Well, that's a good one.
I saw Mike Piazza on many occasions in the Mets clubhouse with his shirt off. His back was covered with acne. I have been told by experts that acne on one's back is a sure sign of steroids use.
Right.
I have written that, and Piazza's fans have ridiculed me for it, but that's what it is. And you know, also, people, I think if you asked most of Piazza's teammates, they would tell you that he used steroids. There's a book out, it's been out for a few years now, written by Jeff Perlman, in which he quotes a former Piazza teammate by name as saying Piazza used steroids. So I have no trouble with Piazza. When Jeff Bagwell became eligible for election, in the first year I voted for him. And
really?
When I mentioned that to somebody, the guy said, "You're crazy. If you're not going to vote for steroids guys, why did you vote for Bagwell?" Well, I was naive about him. I looked into it, talked to people, and found out that he should not be one I vote for. And so I haven't voted for him since. But it is a difficult decision to make because we don't have proof on everybody. You know, look, Ken Griffey was elected last year with the highest percentage ever. And the immediate comment is, well, he never used steroids, and I believe that he never used. But we don't know for sure.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Maybe mm-hmm. he used it and got away with it. But he was, you know, I don't think his body ever really changed the way Barry Bonds did, the way others have, Ivan Rodriguez. So, you know, I'm willing to believe that Griffey did not use. If it comes out someday that he did use, well, shame on me, you know, but I'm willing to accept that.
The rest of your blank ballot is you think that there weren't any great players. There were a lot of very good players. Let me ask you, one name that's come up around here that I guess would fall into that category is Tim Raines, the former Montreal Expos. And it looks as though there's a chance that he may make it this year. And one of the unique things about the Baseball Hall of Fame, Murray, is that you get players that are short, they're short, they're short, and then all of a sudden they get in years after being rejected. Are you comfortable with that part of the process?
I will answer the question generally and then speak specifically about Reigns.
Okay.
No, I'm not happy with it because I want to know what the guy did in the intervening 14 years that made him worthy of the Hall of Fame if he wasn't worthy of it the first 14 years.
Right.
There have been several players who've gotten in the last year. One of the players who got in the last year a while ago was a guy I grew up watching in Pittsburgh, Ralph Kiner. He made it on his last ballot, his last year eligible. Reigns was in his last year this time, and it looks like he might make it. But I do have to wonder how voters think about that, because he hasn't had a hit in 14 or 15 years.
He got better.
Yeah, but there's another element with Reigns, and that is that some years ago he admitted using cocaine. He testified at the drug trials in Pittsburgh that he used cocaine and even carried cocaine in his back pocket in vials and started sliding head first so he wouldn't break the vials. Did he affect the outcome of games? He probably wasn't a better hitter because of his use of cocaine. But the Hall of Fame establishes guidelines for voting. One, of course, is a player's record. Another one is their integrity and their character. And I think a guy who used cocaine, which was an illegal drug, of abuse, suffers with in that category of integrity and character, and it was so long ago that probably most people have forgotten it, and younger voters probably don't even know it.
Right,
that was early in Reigns' career. I don't remember the Pittsburgh drug trial was 1985, so I mean that itself is 30 some years ago, and he used it before, but he admitted that he used it. So I have a problem with that, and that's why I didn't vote for him. Would I have voted for him if not for the cocaine? He would have been on the borderline for me. But if I was going to vote for him for that reason, I would have voted for him, 10, 15 years ago.
Right, of
course. I would not have waited until his last year.
If you want to absorb more of Murray Chass and his thoughts and opinions, murraychass.com. You can read him there. Murray, it's good of you to take time for us today. We appreciate it greatly, and we hope to be able to bother you for a few minutes somewhere down the road. Thank you for this tonight.
I'll be here. Thank you.
Murray Chass, the longtime Major League Baseball writer, one of the best in the business.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we talked about this earlier, if you were with us. The Ontario Hockey League's trade deadline was earlier today. Damian and I are not necessarily of the opinion that this is a good thing, having a trade deadline for young players in the middle of a season. Maybe it should be limited by age. Maybe it should just be wiped out entirely during the course of the season. We think many of these guys, we know many of these guys are students as well as athletes. Or are we nuts, and is this unfair to the players themselves, some of whom will get the opportunity to play for good teams? But remember, there are an equal number or sometimes more
going the other way.
Go the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it. With the commissioner of the OHL, the president of the CHL, David Branch, joins us next on Primetime.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We'll be right back. 18 before the hour. Here's the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League, the president of the CHL. Here's David Branch. Happy New Year, Mr. Branch. How are you?
I'm real good, and of course, same to you and Damien.
No, not to Damien.
Yeah,
who cares about him?
Dave and I are buddies. We have these we have these major conversations.
So we have this was a trade deadline day in the Ontario Hockey League, and we've gotten into this conversation, albeit briefly, on the air about the legitimacy of this and is there a better way and is this the right thing to do and 16-year-olds and all kinds of stuff. Before we get into the specifics, give me a general thought. Are you okay with the trade situation as it exists in junior hockey right now?
Well, generally, I can only say no, but let me, qualify that to the extent that this was the lowest number of players we've ever had traded at our final trade deadline, which means the work we're doing, some of the measures we put into place are having a positive impact in effect. And I might say, too, though, Bob and Damien, having had the opportunity to consider a lot of aspects around trading, after listening to players and their families, and we've canvassed them before, I'm not in favor, would not be in favor of no trading or trading at specific times, largely, not in season as an example for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, we talked about that ourselves.
Mm. Right. So, I mean, you know that, and in fact, we know, and we haven't done an analysis here, but we also go to players that have been traded and asked how the trade occurred. And in over half the cases, the players asked for it, or the families asked for it, or the agent has asked for it. And there's a number of very legitimate reasons, from school requirements and needs, personal reasons, playing time, don't like the coach, on and on and on. So to say you should not have trades isn't the answer. And
Well, okay, but you understand that we look at this list and there are some things that jump out at us and we go, wait a second, we got a 16-year-old not only changing teams but changing countries. We've got Windsor trading a 2026 second-round pick, a 2025 second-round pick, a 2024, a 2023 second-round pick, and I'm not even going to go any further than that. And then they traded a 2024 third-round pick. I mean, there's a bar here, David, and it just seems that in some areas, your league is over it.
Well, you can't fault any team trading draft picks, as you've described, because we have told our teams we'd rather see you trade draft picks
than players.
Okay, right. And that's a byproduct, and we're getting more and more draft picks traded. Is that offensive? I don't think it's nearly as offensive as trading a live person. And what you hope for, which you can't necessarily always safeguard against, is proper management. And that you're going to not suddenly strip a team pretty bare going forward. But I have confidence in our GMs, certainly our owners, who will ensure that would not be the case going forward.
So just so our listeners know, there were 64 draft picks moved, far fewer players. Most of the players moved were 19-year-olds, and there were 6 17-year-olds and only 1 16-year-old. So I think the numbers bear out what you're saying. Let me ask you this, David, because I know, and it's no secret, that there is a tug-of-war often between players, between the Canadian Hockey League and the NCAA. And I know it's something that you guys are very conscious of. And one of the many reasons that you've tried to really push the education part of your program, doesn't it worry you that a kid who's looking at between the two, NCAA and the CHL, might say, well, I'll tell you what, the last thing I want to do is be traded in the middle of a season, so I'm going to go to the NCAA where they won't trade, they can't trade me.
Yeah, there is that side, Damien, no doubt about it. And then also you could also think to yourself, I'm sitting on the bench. I'm not being played. I don't like what I'm doing at school, but I'm stuck. And there's always a balance to everything. And I think one of the things that we've done to complement our student athletes is that every player in high school has a no-trade clause whether they negotiated that in the first instance or not. And then several players do, as you know, negotiate that element, that aspect into their arrangements with the team. So, I mean, is it perfect? No. But is it better than it was? Absolutely. Is there room for improvement? That's always the challenge. And, you know, based on what we've been able to do, what we've been able to affect, I feel confident we're headed in the right direction.
So just to clarify, so I understand, David, so, for example, there was a young man, 17 years old, Nate McDonald, traded from, he was in the Niagara-Peterborough trade. If he'd asked, if he'd wanted to, you're saying because he's in high school, he could have said, no, I don't want to be traded?
That is correct.
Okay.
All high school players can say that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's been a good feature. And then for players in school that are traded, our academic advisors, and each team has at least one, most now have two or three, they work together to facilitate the transfer of the academic records from the high school where he's attending to the new one that he's going to. And it once again, has been a very positive experience for those situations that occur from time to time in terms of the academics.
We understand this is an evolutionary process, and it's always subject to change, and we certainly know that your history has been not to be reluctant to change the system, even dramatically. But if you could change one thing about this trade deadline, the one thing that you would do would be what?
I would want to move it earlier in the year.
Okay.
Let's say the 1st of December. We currently have certain periods where you cannot trade through the Christmas period,
right,
holiday season, obviously. For players that are part of the Canada's national junior team, as an example, this year they couldn't be traded from December 10th to January 5th, so as not to disrupt their mindset or whatever the case may be while on that exciting journey. But I think if we were to move it earlier, suddenly you won't have as many teams that aren't necessarily forecasted not to make the playoffs. And as well, I think our teams would have a hard time in their communities to say to their fans, you know what, we're throwing in the towel here. So I think that's one area that we've got to really push the envelope on. Whether we can get that across the finish line remains to be seen. But we're all conscious of it. We're all aware of it. And I'm pleased with the progress that, as a group, our owners, our coaches and managers have made today.
About a minute here, quick, so I need a quick answer to this. As the president of the CHL, is there a disparity between the three leagues, a significant disparity as to the trade rules?
There's quite a bit of difference, yes, Bob. I mean, the Quebec League has a unique educational system driven by the province of Quebec where their players' semesters are really in six-week blocks and they can only be traded in between semesters.
Yeah. But is it problematic, David? I'm sorry to cut you, but we're really tight on time. Is right. It problematic, or are you okay with it?
I'm not sure it's where you want to be, looking at the number of players that do get moved.
Yeah. Listen, we thank you very much, as always.
Thanks,
you're generous with your time, and thanks for all the explanations. And we'll talk soon, I hope.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. All the best.
David Branch, the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League and president of the CHL.
One of the great things he does whenever we talk, because you come at it like you and I were, I'm not comfortable with this. I didn't know that high school kids couldn't be traded. So that is something.
Well, they can't be traded without their permission.
Right, without their permission.
And that's very important.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes my perspective a fair bit.
Yeah, and one thing I learned a lot is what the Ontario Hockey League has done with the education packages. And I know that's a big thing with a lot of people. So anyways, he's usually good at explaining it better is exactly what's going on.
You know what I wanted to ask too is, and I always forget to do this.
We'll get him back on the phone.
What's the percentage of players in the Ontario Hockey League or in CHL that are actually in high school? Do you know the answer?
I don't.
I think it's something we should we should address next time we talk to him.
Let's do that.
If I forget again.
I'll probably forget too.
Oh, great. Well, then I'll get somebody in here who can remind me. Our thanks to David Branch, Murray Chass, Elliot Friedman for this hour. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.